Welcome back to Your Latino USA. I'm Daisy Rosario in for Maria Hinojosa. Today we're talking about questions of genius, and in this case, study. Last month, the first ever International Latino-Latina Studies Conference was held in Chicago. Maria Hinojosa sat down with a group of leaders in the field to discuss the current state of Latino studies. But before we get into their conversation, we need to understand how Latino studies got started. It's a relatively young field. Latino studies came out of the ethnic studies movement in the late 60s and early 70s. Students of color protested because they felt that their history and experience wasn't reflected in university or college curricula.
That the demands of the black students and the Third World Liberation Front are not discussable, negotiable, debatable, or compromisable.
Early departments focused mainly on Chicano or Puerto Rican studies, but as the Latino diaspora became more diverse, so did Latino studies departments. These departments have often come under attack by politicians. In 2013, Texas State Senator Dan Patrick presented a bill that would disqualify ethnic studies courses from counting toward core history requirements. And again, there were protests.
After September 1st, if we don't act, our heroes will not be in textbooks.
It never occurred to me that we would have to defend ethnic studies here in Texas.
The bill didn't pass, but bills like this one, book bans, and dissolved university departments reflect the challenges that Latino studies continues to face. Here's Maria Hinojosa.
I'm joined by Frances Aparicio, who's one of the organizers of the conference. She's the director of the Latino-Latina Studies Program at Northwestern University here in Chicago. Hey, Frances.
How are you?
Good, good. And Rusty Barceló is the president of Northern New Mexico College and nationally known for her work in diversity. Hola, Rusty.
Hello.
Juana Maria Rodriguez is a professor of gender and women's studies at UC Berkeley and the author of Queer Latinidad, Identity Practices, Discursive Spaces. Hey, Juana.
It's nice to be here.
Good. So let's start. It's a big, big question, but let's just try and define Latino-Latina studies as concisely as possible. Juana?
I mean, I think part of what we need to understand is that the formation of Latino studies really came about because these issues were not being addressed in the traditional disciplines. So we would study history without understanding the role of Latinos in that history. We would study literature without necessarily getting insight into Latino authors. And so I think that's the formation of these fields.
What's the problem? Why does the field of Latino-Latina studies confront challenges? And what are those challenges that you confront?
Well, one thing I might say is that, you know, education in general has become really politicized, right? So there is this idea that somehow education is supposed to be neutral, that we're supposed to be present both sides. So both sides to slavery, right? I mean, or both sides to immigration. So there's this outside perception that somehow we're being too political or we're only representing one side of this equation. Education is always invested in politics, whether you're studying Shakespeare or whether you're studying transnational migration.
Well, that's why it's kind of, I mean, isn't that about what academics do, is that you focus in on one area, you teach that area. Why this notion that you can't just teach Latino studies because somehow that means you're leaving someone out?
Well, I think there's another point that we need to consider is when it first came into being or when it was evolving, it was seen as political. It wasn't introduced in an educational kind of a context. And I think we've spent a long time trying to diffuse that kind of thinking when, in fact, it is very much an academic concept. It should be at the core mission of the institution. But Latino studies often has been seen as not as legitimate to the canon because it was started out in an interdisciplinary kind of a model. And so really, and also identifying it with identity politics, that it's only about Latinos when, in fact, you know, the Latino experience affects the entire United States, if not the world.
So I want you guys to, because all of you are from such different regions, Rusty, New Mexico, Juana, you're in Berkeley, Frances, you're in Evanston, outside of Chicago. Describe for me your student body. Just give me a typical example of some of your students.
Well, at Northern New Mexico College, our students represent 80% Latino at our institution, Hispano students, and 12% Native students. But even in an institution like that, where you would think this is a no-brainer, so to speak, these students are just engaged when all of a sudden they start to discover themselves.
Why not your typical student body in Berkeley?
Well, you know, before I came to Berkeley, I was at Bryn Mawr College, and I think that's a really interesting point of comparison. I mean,
Bryn Mawr College
is outside of Philadelphia, small, elite, liberal
very
arts.
Elite.
And teaching Latino literature and culture there, you know, I would have the student from South Texas that had been a farm worker. I would have the Dominican student from Harlem. I would have the daughter that, you know, from Mexico City that went to high school with her bodyguard, right? And so it was actually a great manufactured diversity, but it was actually a great context for teaching about Latino issues.
Were your students like Rusty's students, who many of them say this was life-changing for them to learn, to be in a Latino studies class?
Yes.
Same thing for you?
Yes, I think it was. And what I thought was interesting about that context was precisely engaging with those differences, because the student from Mexico City is sitting next to the girl that was picking oranges, right, from Texas. And so, who's also Mexicana, right? But somehow there's this kind of gap, right? In California, because it's a large state public school, I think there's actually less diversity in some ways. So getting students in California to think about Black Latinos, for example, really? You know, or it's just not something that's part of their landscape.
Because you've had to confront this as professors, have you come up with ways in which you're able to do something really effective to make that one kid who is resistant, let's say, why do I have to be in this Latino studies class, to then say, oh, no, there's this other way of looking at it?
I use a lot of popular culture in my classes because I think one of the ways in which not just Latino students, but, you know, all kinds of students are dancing to Daddy Yankee. The other thing that I talk about a lot is law. I mean, it's curious. I teach a class, Race, Gender, and Justice, and talking about, like, stop and frisk, right? And for me, making that connection to that white student is saying, okay, where are the cops on a Saturday night? Are they in front of frat row, right, at Berkeley? Are they there looking for underage drinking and drug use? Or are they, you know, in the streets of, you know, Oakland?
So do you use the fact that you are trying to get your Latino students to identify with their identity and personal history as a way to draw out non-Latino students and say, we want to hear your history too? It's equal valid, Francis?
Well, it is. And I think it's important also to recognize within those, throughout those personal histories, you know, the power differentials. I mean, you know, which immigrant groups, you know, get more access to resources when they come in? How do they get defined, you know, when they come in? I mean, some are more white, some are less white. The colonial history between Latin America and the United States that already, you know, frames immigrants from Latin America as cheap labor. One important thing about our courses is also that mixed race students are beginning now to be part of our student population. And when you have a Colombian, you know, the child of a Colombian father and a white mother, or, you know, even now the intralatinos too, like the Mexican child, you know, students.
My kids are Dominimex.
Yeah. But then, you know, all of these mixed identities now are also part of our discussion, and they have to be included too.
Now, I am a professor 6 months out of the year at DePaul University here in Chicago, and I am part of the Latin American Latino Latina Studies Department. Mm-hmm. But my students will often say, mi mamá no sabe por qué estudio esto. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad just say, why are you studying Latino studies? Mm-hmm. How are you going to get a job? So what do you say?
When you graduate with a BA in psychology, you don't go out and be a psychologist, right? What education is about is about learning to read, learning to write persuasively. The other thing is, if you're going into media, you know, Latinos are a market, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going into advertising, if you're going into the tech industry, mm-hmm. if you're going into healthcare, these are communities that are underserved.
One of the things I think we do have to do, and it's one of the things I ask my faculty, because we also have to convince our faculty as to why studying Latino studies is an important field. what do we want our students to know? Do we want them to be prepared to go into the world? Mm-hmm. And this should be but one part of that discussion, and it is not right now. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to me that in spite of the changing demographics, not to see Latino studies as an important part of educating all of our students, I think we're failing our students in the end.
Because you want everyone to be taking Latino studies yeah. classes.
Including our faculty.
This is the first time that you have a gathering of this size mm-hmm. To talk about Latino-Latina studies. What's the dream of what happens after this inaugural conference of Latino-Latina studies here in Chicago?
We don't want to standardize the field because I think it is so diverse and so richly heterogeneous, right? But also advocate for the needs and the interests of the scholars across the country. The programs themselves are still not that visible and not that legitimate in a world and in a country in which Latinos are so important, right? So I think that in itself is part of the goal.
President Rusty Barceló.
One of the things that we forget is that Latino studies in many ways has already transformed higher education, and there's very little acknowledgement of the contributions that we've made to higher education. Mm-hmm. We've introduced what to teach, how to teach, and we do it differently. And so we've created, I think, a whole discourse that I think has affected interdisciplinarity just in general on college campuses. For example, part of our original missions, if you will, through Chicano studies, Puerto Rican studies, Latino studies, is our engagement with the community. It is now common practice. That came out of our efforts. But there's very little recognition of what Latino studies has done for higher education in general.
Francis?
The idea is that once the association picks up and gets organized and structured, then we will be able to have a space and we will continue to have these spaces for discussion every 2 years.
Well, thanks so much for this great conversation. I think we'll pick it up probably in 2 years, if not before.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Francis Aparicio, professor and director of the Latino-Latina Studies Program at Northwestern University, Nancy, also known as Rusty Barceló, the president of Northern New Mexico College, and Juana Maria Rodriguez, professor of Women and Gender Studies at Berkeley University, sitting down with Maria Hinojosa. We thank them for taking the time during the conference to speak with us.